everyone, and welcome back to the sixth and final piece of our six-part series, Get Schooled in Architecting. If you've been with us for the first five episodes, we did an overview of the essay exam. We went over secure architectures. We talked about resilient solutions, performance solutions, and cost-effective solutions. So today, this will be our final episode of our six-part series and our wrap-up. We are going to be talking about what is the essay role, next steps to get that hands-on experience, and going over a lot of resources that are free or cost, you know, not too much. So thanks for joining us, and we have a great show for you today.
So what has everybody been up to since the last show?
I took vacation, which was nice. I took a week off. And this week I'm in a classroom full of students, so which is awesome, which is where I love to be. So I'm teaching architecting in a mountain, Maryland this week, which is a lot of fun.
Nice. How about you, Caroline?
Oof, what have I been doing? I am actually going down to HQ2 tomorrow for a doc read. I'm super excited. And hopefully it goes somewhere exciting. Here at Amazon, we have a big writing culture. So all ideas start with a document. So hopefully something cool coming soon that I can share.
Oh, nice.
Love it.
Same. Maybe you can clarify what a doc read actually is for our listeners, because I think a lot of people would not know what that means. Only like internal folks who go into, you know, quarterly business reviews and things like that would understand. But no, that's really cool. And I am, like Ted, getting ready to go on vacation. So I've been doing a lot of customer follow-ups, as is very often the case for the essay role, right? Because you're on calls and taking all kinds of technical questions that may or may not be falling into your immediate area of expertise. So some things you have to follow up on after the call. So you have to do some research and find documentation and blogs and some workshops, and sometimes, you know, get the hands-on going on and try it out yourself and then follow up with the customer. So I have a handful of follow-ups I need to knock out before I go on vacation next week. So that's been my primary focus this week.
How fun. Are you going to be off the whole week?
No, not the whole week. I'll be gone through the weekend and coming back on the following Wednesday. We're going on a cruise.
Oh, how fun. Ooh.
Very nice. And speaking of all essay things and teaching and the essay role, can you talk a little bit, you know, let's say I've listened to all this, I've taken the exam. What does my essay role look like in the real world now? What type of jobs am I searching for? How does that link back to my exam?
That's a great question to tie it all together, Dave. I think of the essay role, it kind of morphs depending on the situation that you're in, right? It's almost like this amoeba kind of role. It really depends on what's going on at the time. So it is a customer facing role, right? That is primarily what it is. You're there in front of the customer. You are speaking to them directly about their technical needs or what it is that they're trying to build out, some new project or workload or maybe a feature. And you have to enjoy actually talking to them and understanding what their goals are, what it is that they're trying to accomplish, like from the business and from the technical perspective. So there's definitely some discovery involved, right? Like you need to get practice on talking to the clients to understand what kind of relevant discovery questions to ask them to determine what their requirements are. Like that's a big part of the role. So a lot of the times in meetings, you have to ask very pointed questions and listen, right? Like that's a really big part of the role, and just take notes and understand how that backs into the technical requirement at the end of the day. So you need to be able to translate what the customer says into like a technical solution. So that's a big part of it. And that takes practice. Sometimes you have to do it a couple of times to really understand what the customer is talking about, recognize some patterns that they're mentioning or some limitations of services, right? So that comes with practice. So the exam certainly helps you with that because it gives realistic scenarios on every question, right? So that's very important. But at the end of the day, it does take some practice, and the other parts of the role involve hands-on things. Sometimes customers want to see a solution presented to them in a proof of concept, or they want to actually see if this thing you're proposing works. So you would actually go into your console, set something up, and present a demo, right? So you would kind of take on that builder role a lot of the times as well, put something together, share an architectural solution like a diagram with your customer, explain it to them on the call in detail, answer questions, provide references to documentation, blogs, and so forth, and actually walk them through the console on how they can set something like that up. So it's kind of a mix, right? It's and part of the role is sort of what we're doing today, like with this blog series, right? We try to educate our audience and our community about how to grow their skills, where to get relevant resources, and like what's important for the role and about AWS, right? So the role is kind of multifaceted, right? So it kind of is composed of these different things. So depending on what's needed at the time, you sort of take on a different persona, I would say. Caroline, I know you spend a lot of time in front of customers as well. Do you have anything to kind of add?
I think you gave a really awesome description to start to set the scene. You know, and I think just one other thing that I want to call out is getting this essay type experience that comes out of the exam is not just applicable to, you know, the consulting role that I have or the essay role that Anya has. I think that these skills are absolutely extensible across really our whole realm of technology, as everything really intersects with the cloud these days, right? I think when you think about architecting and building and how to set those solutions up, it transcends into a lot of different, you know, technical organizations in different ways. So I think it's maybe one other point I'd want to call out. But I think in terms of, you know, essay versus like on the delivery side of consulting, there's a lot of overlap, right? And so I think what you just said, it really resonates with me. I would say from my end of things, we just go a little bit deeper into actually building out, you know, not just a demo, but into a POC and potentially even into like a feature set, depending on what the customer needs and how exactly we were engaged with the customer. So I think you summed it up great. Thanks, Anya.
Sure. Sure thing.
Yeah. One thing the exam doesn't test you on are the people skills. Right, that are part of the job. And as an SA, you've got to be able to talk to people and present your solutions. And having the technical chops is one thing, but I think you have to not only be able to dive deep technically, but you have to be able to embrace interacting with people to really be very successful as an SA.
And they don't always say what they mean, Ted, people.
You mean deciphering what the customer says? And these could be internal.
So true. Yeah. So true. And that's what I meant when I was saying, you know, you have to learn how to translate what they're saying into actual technical requirements with services and how you actually build that out. And some of it, I would say that definitely comes with practice. Like you actually have to talk to the customer and ask them the right questions, right? Some of it is definitely going to help you from reading like questions on the exam to put you into a realistic scenario. But, you know, people are unpredictable. They ask you all kinds of questions during calls. Some of them you can answer, some of them you can't, which is where you table them and say, you know, dear customer, I'll have to follow up with you, you know, later on and go research something. But certainly being in those realistic scenarios and getting that practice is so crucial to kind of immerse yourself and understand what the role is really about.
I do a lot of helping people that are just, you know, whether they're graduating or they're entering the field, I get asked for a lot of advice. And there's a big difference between engineering roles and customer facing roles. And it's always not clear. And I think it's a really good way to phrase this. It makes me think, there was a tweet, I don't know if you've heard of John Carmack. He worked for id Software. He was the developer who actually coded what was, you know, Castle Wolfenstein, which became Doom, which became Quake, that changed that whole first person perspective. And in gaming, and he wrote it all in C, and he's always been viewed as one of the most brilliant programmers of our time. And he actually wrote something. He did a tweet the other day that really stuck with me. He was like, you know, I tried management and I just realized I'm more comfortable with code than people. But he was like, the idea of managing AIs is something that's pretty appealing to me. And I, you know, I'm like, as we move this, you know, as we move forward, I think we're going to have roles where, you know, if you're a developer listening to this and you're like, the idea of just interfacing with human beings all day is a little cringe to me, you may be interfacing with AI. Like your role is going to expand too. So it's not, and if you're the type of person that it's like the idea of just writing code all day and not being able to talk to the people who are using it is cringe, you know, then SA is more of that for you. And I think we're going to have, especially in the next couple of years, I mean, I've been around long enough to walk through these transitions in our industry, and people need people during that. You know, there's going to be a lot of people that are like, what does this AI stuff really mean? And like help me, you know, in that. And so I think that these type of roles that are customer facing become even more important in that. So really great point.
And I think another thing there is the certification isn't the destination. It's just a mile marker on your journey. The learning doesn't stop. Getting certified shouldn't be the end goal.
That's something we never mentioned. Yeah, these things are only good for 3 years, right? I forgot. Yeah, well,
you can renew them and you can add other certs. And you know, after you get the associate, if you take the pro exam, the associate pro, it recerts your associate for another 3 years.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. So the bigger ones reset the smaller ones.
Yes.
They don't do that for cloud practitioner, do they?
They also reset your cloud practitioner as well.
Which is why that is a positive. If you take the cloud practitioner, then the associate, then the professional, because then every time you take the professional, it'll renew the other two automatically.
But here's where I messed up. I thought, I didn't realize there was a time limit. Like, you have to take the next one before the associate expires. So that's where I went wrong.
Yeah, I let my cloud practitioner expire, so I think I have to just start the whole cycle over again.
Yeah, now they actually announced a month ago there is a free course you can take online if you go into AWS CloudQuest and you go through the challenges, which are basically at the cloud practitioner level, 8 free labs. That will automatically recertify your cloud practitioner cert if it hasn't expired yet.
Whoa, how cool.
I did not know about that.
Look at all these tips.
That's brand new. And so they just announced that a month ago. And we're going to see how it works. And I hope that we have a recertification process sort of branch out after we learn from this to see if we can do something like that with some of the other certs. Nothing's been announced yet, though. Just that we're looking at it. So
I like that. It's like kind of like a refresh of content around that same certification topic. Can you walk through, you know, speaking of like real world and hands-on, you mentioned CloudQuest. Can you kind of do a level set of what CloudQuest is? And maybe we talk about a lot of these resources for the exam.
Sure. So CloudQuest is a gamified learning environment. It's available through AWS Skill Builder. And think of a 3D game where you're achieving objectives. And with each objective, you're given an actual AWS lab that is pre-built. And you finish the lab to achieve an objective and you get points and pets. And it is sort of a fun way to learn AWS. And you can compete with other people as well. We have CloudQuest is available from Skill Builder on a free level for the cloud practitioner. And then if you subscribe to the premium Skill Builder package, which is about $26 a month, it gives you access to a lot of other learning content as well as some gamified learning for the other certifications, including the SA. But here's the thing. The free cloud practitioner labs through that CloudQuest are all solutions architect applicable. You will build EC2 instances. You will investigate a VPC. And there are about 6 to 8 labs that you will do that are complementary. I think building is the best way to learn this. And I think one thing I really recommend to people that is outside of AWS is Google the AWS Cloud Resume Challenge. You know, you have to be able to build some things, and you want to be able to show off your knowledge. So if you just get certified and you're looking for a position as a solutions architect or doing something cloud, you need to have a portfolio to show off. So I think that the Cloud Resume Challenge, if you Google this, we'll put a link inside the show notes. It's basically a challenge that sort of walks you through. It's by Force Brazil, who sort of walks you through building your resume using all of the various AWS services. You know, setting up an API gateway, using S3 to host static website content. So real practical use of AWS resources. I think if you're not building, you're not really doing anything with the certification you're studying for.
And I think that I've got to add as well, you know, what is the saying? You know, I hear and I forget, I see and I remember, I do and I understand, right? Like, I think that's so applicable here. You know, you see, you can hear about a service or a use case, you know, and even myself in the role, right? I would look at some architecture diagram and say, oh, okay, well, that kind of makes sense, you know, that's how things are interacting here. And then a same use case would come up and it wouldn't trigger immediately in my head that like a similar pattern applies here. And I think that's where the hands-on is so crucial, because once you go through it in the console and actually build it out and debug things that are not working and really see how things are plugging together, that's when your real understanding kind of comes in. And I know that's sort of, you know, kind of beyond the exam, right? Like in the exam, you apply different strategies, like eliminating choices that don't apply. But like to really know the stuff, you have to kind of take that extra step and do the hands-on, which is why like the labs will really help you in the exam as well. Like the hands-on, it will really help you there.
Yeah. And I think there are a lot of resources that are available at AWS that people just aren't aware of that are, you know, complimentary. So I mentioned Skill Builder, and even without signing up for the premium service that has labs, there are over 500 free digital courses. One way to go through those, I did a little blog post, I'll put a link to this as well, is they're sort of arranged by, there are these Credly digital badges that you can get for saying you are, you know, architecture specialized. If you're, you know, there's a badge for learning S3, there's a badge for learning EBS. These are all things that as you're studying towards the solutions architect certification, these are little mile markers on the road as you're studying, and they don't cost anything. But I like the digital courses where I can sort of learn at my own pace. And with that, there's also the AWS free tier. So when we look at building our own accounts and I want to build a WordPress blog or I want to actually build something, that first year of AWS usage with a lot of services at certain levels is free. So you want to look at that. Of course, set up a budgetary alarm to make sure that you're not charging yourself anything on that. But I would look at the AWS free tier. I would also look at outside of the structured labs that we have in services like Skill Builder, another site that's really worth looking at is workshops.aws. And these are all workshops that you can build on your own. And you're only going to pay for the services for as much time as you use them.
So a fun fact about workshops, because I've contributed to a fair share of my workshops. These things are so meticulously upkept by our internal teams, and so many different people across AWS come together to put these things together. And so when you think about a new service rolling out, right, like there is a team that is actively saying, well, when this service comes out, right, and I was involved in the release of Code Whisperer almost 2 years ago, there is a whole team that's like, hey, we want to make sure we have a supplementary workshop so people can, you know, go figure out how to do it and we can hold their hand as they do it for the first time. And so a fun little tidbit is if you ever go to an AWS event or an AWS session at an event, oftentimes you'll actually walk through a workshop that's actually just available on the website. So how cool is that, right? Fun little fact there.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, my favorite workshop is I do a lot with EKS, or Elastic Kubernetes Service. And the cool thing about the EKS workshop for that is it continues to evolve. And all of the code for the workshop is available on GitHub. And they keep adding, or we keep adding, new features to it, which is pretty awesome. So yeah, I like the idea of learning everything I can. As when I started getting my certifications, I was definitely on a budget. So I really utilized AWS free tier to build and experiment and break things. But again, I think you have to build. And I think it's a good thing to take the risk and get out of a structured lab environment and experiment on your own.
Just set the budget alert for yourself to get an email that you're exceeding your $10 a month limit, so you know that you're approaching that.
Yeah. One other thing that I'll mention is there is another program we'll put a link to called AWS Educate that has some free digital learning. Why would I sign up for AWS Educate? Because when you sign up, they will give you a $50 AWS credit towards lab usage.
Nice.
And there's some free learning there. It used to be geared just towards undergraduate education, and they've expanded it recently. So anyone can sign up as long as they are over 18 and get some free credits on their account.
Okay. Well, whenever I need some fun hacks, Ted, you're who I'm coming to now.
So you know, when we talk about other things, sample tests, I think, are really important as people are getting ready to take the exam. There are inside Skill Builder and AWS, there are both free versions, and then the paid premium version has some sample tests as well. The one thing I like about sample tests from AWS is they are written by subject matter experts. And when you get questions wrong, they give you links to the documentation to show you why you're wrong. So I think they're very helpful. With the price of exams, I used to go through I started with the Cloud Practitioner Essentials because that was only $75. And I passed that, and I got a 50% off coupon for my next exam, the SA, the Solution Architect Associate, which was $150, but I got it for $75 because I passed my previous exam.
And that would happen for the other exams as well, right?
Exactly. Every time you pass an exam, you get a 50% off coupon that you can use.
Other advantage of starting with the Cloud Practitioner. It may seem, you know, for some people, they would think that it might be a little bit basic for their technical role or skill set, but that's another advantage of doing the Cloud Practitioner. Other thing maybe I would add, aside from getting that 50% price break, is there are multiple options for taking the test, right? You can take it at home virtually in your home office. The other option is a lot of people take it in a testing center, which is what I do, close to where I live. And it's just good to kind of have maybe a slightly easier set of questions and exam to go through for the first time to understand like how the system works, what kind of, you know, interface you're presented with, how you're timed, how you mark questions for follow-up, things like that. So it's a little bit easier to get yourself acclimated to like the exam taking process by taking something like a Cloud Practitioner, which is the reason why I took that first also, just to kind of understand what is the experience like, you know, being in a test center and taking an exam. Because before these exams, I haven't taken standardized tests in a long time. And I think that's probably true for a lot of people.
And yeah. I know for me, I live in New York City. There is always construction going on outside, something going on in the hallway. And so when I go to the testing center, I don't have to deal with that. And they always give me noise canceling headphones and earplugs. And I'm like, I need all of the help I can get to concentrate. So I found that is pretty consistent in all of the testing centers.
Yes. And for me, where I live, we have a lot of power outages. So that's one of the reasons I started going to the testing center. So just to understand the flow of like, how early do you have to get there? Like things like that, just like the mechanics of it. I found it very helpful. So I would recommend people do the cloud practitioner first.
I didn't know about the noise canceling headphones. That's great. Can you walk through like the actual process of how do I sign up for this? Like what is signing up for the exam? Is there a website? Is there things I should be aware of? And then, you know, is it different for recertification? You know, maybe I'm listening to this, I already have an exam and I'm like, I want to go to a testing center. Is there a different process because I already have an exam, but now I want to recertify? How does that all work?
Sure. So if you go out to aws.training and you click on the certification link, that will bring you to the portal for all things for setting up your certification. So we use Pearson View around the world as our testing partner. And so we have a portal that we get to through aws.training to set up a profile with them using your email address. When you set up the exam, you're going to have the choice to have either virtually proctored or to go in person. I've done both, and I think they both have pros and cons. I like being able to do this in my own house sometimes on a Saturday afternoon when a testing center might not be open. But I also, you have to do things like remove extra monitors off your desk and realize you're going to have someone watching you. So you can't mumble to yourself while you're taking a virtual test because they may think that you're talking to someone else. Pearson View right now is our one global partner that we use. But it's nice that we have various options. When you sign up for this exam, you're going to choose a date time range, and you're going to choose, they'll let you choose like three different training centers to look for a specific calendar date. Then when you choose one, you'll make your payment. You can put a promo code if you have one to get a discount, and you'll get an email confirmation. If you ever need to reschedule your exam, you can do that for no charge, but you have to give them at least 24-hour notice. But I am a big proponent of scheduling an exam date because that makes it not a dream. It makes it more of a reality. You know, I'm going to take this exam a week from Tuesday. Well, if I've got an exam scheduled and some money or some skin in the game, you know I'm going to study for it.
I think it's also worth noting that if something does come up, you can reschedule and you can do it twice, actually, with no penalty. You can reschedule up to two times. But if you do need to reschedule a third time, they do ask you to cancel, actually, within that 24-hour window, and then to schedule it again so you can get a refund.
That's a good reminder. Thank you. Thank you, Anya. I know. Sometimes I've rescheduled twice and gotten up to that point. And it's been a while since we talked about it. Ted, can you remind us how many questions is this exam and what does a passing score? What is a passing score?
So this exam is scored on a scale of 100 to 1,000 points. So I guess you get 100 points for showing up, which is awesome. And there are 65 questions. But again, only 50 of the questions are scored. So we are continually changing our exam pool and evaluating new questions. So you want to answer every question. And a 720 out of 1,000 is a passing score. The other thing that I will mention is that it may take 24 hours to get your exam results. It is not necessarily instantaneous. So that is a little letdown. You finish the exam and then go home and wait for an email.
And that's normal. I think for the cloud practitioner, maybe I've gotten an immediate result, but for the other exams, I have not. And that's normal. It doesn't mean anything about how you did. Like, you shouldn't be reading anything into it. It's just standard policies and procedures for things to be reviewed in the testing center. So just watch out for an email in your inbox within typically 24 hours, and they'll tell you the result with a link.
Yeah.
When I took the DevOps Pro cert, I was so nervous. It was hard. I'm not going to lie. It was really hard. Yeah. And I click submitted and I forgot that, right? Like, I forgot that it wasn't instantaneous. So I'm sitting there, I'm sweating, my fingers are crossed. And it was like, you should hear back in 24 hours or 48 hours.
Yeah.
But I actually got an email later that night. Like, I think it was like a Friday and I finished the exam at like 5 and by 9 p.m. So that's not typical, but you know, sometimes you do hear back a little bit sooner than their window, but that really threw me off. I was nervous. So that is a great reminder.
Yeah. And one thing that I do with every exam I take is I have a pad of paper and a pen sitting in my car. And when I leave that test center, I jot down every topic that I wasn't familiar enough with. What, I don't know if I passed or failed, but if I don't know this certain word that they asked about auto-scaling groups, I'm jotting that down and I'm looking it up. You know, I'm not writing down exact questions because I'm definitely not going to remember them. My mind doesn't work that way. But I am writing down the topics that I was least familiar with. So that way, if I don't pass, I know where to focus a little bit. And one of the other things that you're going to get in your score report inside of Prometric is you are going to see, based on the four different exam topics, how you scored percentage-wise on each of those topics. So whether you're pass or fail, where are your strong points and where are your weak points?
That's actually a really good call out, Ted. For each exam, there's a different number of domains that will be covered. So for example, for the essay associate exam, we have four different domains, right? And for each one, it'll tell you if you meet expectations or you don't meet expectations. So there's some number of questions on the exam that fall into those different domains. However, you don't have to meet expectations across all the domains to pass. It looks at you passing overall across all the different domains versus just one or the other. But it does give you a good idea if you're weak in specific areas. So I've definitely found that helpful in the past when I've taken exams and saw that I have weaknesses.
Yeah, this has been incredible. And cool. I will put all of these resources in the show notes. Are there things we haven't mentioned? I know we do a lot of stuff on Twitch. And like, I'll put where listeners can find you. But anything you want to leave us with that isn't necessarily in that full list of things like CloudQuest and other things we mentioned?
Well, I like our Twitch shows. And the one thing that I've really been getting into, you know, Gen AI is so popular. I like using Party Rock as a study buddy. If I don't know the answer to something or I want more detail, I ask the Gen AI. And I get an answer. It just saves me so much time trying to dig through documentation. So that's my cool tool that I'm using these days.
Yeah.
The other thing is summits and meetups. It's summit season. So there are free conferences that you can go to learn more about AWS. And I think we need to put a link in the show notes to AWS summits.
Yeah.
New York, DC. I think we've got one coming up in LA, as well as various places around the world. I'm just thinking of the US ones that I know of. But these are free conferences.
And they're not like a tiny little meetup when you go. I was blown away. Like, if you've never been to reInvent, go to a summit. They are literally mini reInvents with thousands of people.
Yeah.
And they're free.
That's the thing about
summits. They're free. So anybody can sign up and go, attend the sessions, and network and learn about AWS.
A free lunch. And if anyone's familiar with like the New York area, they take over at the Javits Center. That's a huge conference center. Like,
yeah.
And they fill it. And there's so many sessions. I was amazed. The Javits Center is huge. And I'm sure it's equal scale across the board.
Yeah. I think of a summit as being the equal to another company's annual conference with the amount of people that come to that. Because it's huge. I mean, reInvent is a whole nother animal. If you get the opportunity to go to Vegas the week after Thanksgiving and join, you know, the other 59,000 AWS customers that take over the strip. That's fun. But that also costs money. Summits are complimentary and they are 1 and 2 day events. And you can sort of choose what you want to learn. And then the other thing, you know, if I cover up the AWS badge on my shirt, there is a vendor hall there and you can meet all of these partners that integrate with AWS and really learn that way as well. See what tools people are using.
But from the point of view of studying, I would also say meetups are really good because you can potentially find people who are interested to form a study group. And sometimes that's very helpful for people to work with a partner to study for these exams or to kind of study independently or at least have some check-ins and go through questions together. I've definitely found that to be a useful approach that people use. They study with somebody else and go through exam questions to check their understanding.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a great point, Anya.
Amazing. Well, I appreciate all of you. Thank you so much for your time. For the listeners that don't know, Ted's literally teaching a class and he's recording this in a room he found while his class eats lunch. I think that just speaks to all of your dedication in learning. I know for me, it's always been the people, the real teachers that have gotten me excited about technology and really allowed me to come over hurdles. And you all have that. So thank you so much for taking the time. Just the feedback I've gotten from the audience so far has been really good. The amount of people that, and we talked a little bit about this off mic, that we've been seeing that are following us, that are outside of the different kind of domains that we usually see, means that this is reaching people. More people are getting excited about learning. I hope we can do more of these in the future. And I just want to thank you all.
Glad to be here. Thanks, Dave, for hosting us.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. And to everyone who's been listening, we're really excited about you building. I hope you get as excited about this technology as we are.
Thank you guys for joining. Thanks for making it to the end of this 6-part series. We hope if you take anything away, you had fun with this and you're inspired. Thanks for joining and we hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.